Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mesut Özil, Alexis, vaya mano y el remate a gol de Lacazette. 1-0 Arsenal, Lacazette. Marca el delantero francés.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnar Blog. James, good evening to you.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Why not?
Why not? Let's do it. Let's call it a good evening. You know, are you well? Seems the obvious question in the circumstances.
I feel okay. I don't have any. Now that you say it, I'm. I feel like I might have a little bit of a dry cough, but I don't have a fever.
Well, there you go. I can't imagine it's anything bad, as far as I'm aware. There's nothing troubling going on in the outside
nothing
world.
Going around. So. And you, I mean, I suppose, given your track record,
I'm a time bomb, aren't I, waiting to happen. I mean, the smart money's all on me. But people are surprised I've not already become a statistic, I think.
Will you become the first podcaster to contract the coronavirus? You could be like the Juventus guy. He's the first footballer that we know of to get it. And you could be the first podcaster /
maybe
football writer. Who knows?
Would they put you in isolation because of your proximity? As if somehow through the internet I could infect you.
You never know. You never know.
I liked the guy you had on the other day.
Thank you. Yes.
I have to say, my friend Annie McGraw, said that when you introduced a guest and you were like, and this guy's coming on and he's a scientific expert and he studies, you know, biology and he's going to talk about it. She thought it was going to be me doing a character, which would have been very funny if it was just me like doing a silly voice and pretending to know about science.
I feel like that might have been somewhat irresponsible to do that. No, everything's fine. Look, go out. You know what you should do? Just all go out and spit in each other's mouths. That's how you get rid of this coronavirus thing. No, it was good, you know, just to sort of lay out the facts and to get as much expert information as we could. And obviously there are people, you know, who will listen to this who don't, I'm not saying that that it applies to everyone, but who don't maybe necessarily watch the news or what have you because they don't have time or they can't be arsed. Because, you know, I find even myself, like, you know, I want to know the news, but I kind of hate everyone who presents the news and does news programs and radio shows and stuff like that. Like, I've got a very short attention span for a lot of these people because they're just twats. So, you know, if it helps some people understand what's going on and to understand coronavirus a bit more and to use the platform for something good, then I'm, you know, delighted to do that. And the feedback from it has been really excellent. So if you haven't listened to it, it's a podcast. Well, you know, in your podcast app, just listen to the one before this one.
Is good. Yeah, it is worth listening to. I'm not worried for my regular place, I'll be honest. I don't know if he's going to be on every... Maybe cup games, getting back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't...
It's not like when Tayo's on, do you know what I mean? And everyone's messaging all the time, Tayo's good, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, can we have Tayo all the time? I get sick of that, absolutely furious.
Yeah, to be fair to the professor, I don't know that this is necessarily in his wheelhouse. You know, talk
the
to
ask
him about...
us extra. Yeah. It's just you and the professor every week.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, if there's a sort of a deadly virus going around the world forever...
You know,
we might do a few more, but, you know, hopefully it won't be with us for too long. And it's strange. I mean, like, how are you feeling about it all? Because today is a weird day in Ireland because, you know, it was announced that from tomorrow all the schools are closing, mass gatherings. So that means, you know, concerts, theatres, I'm guessing cinemas. So, you know, schools, third level education, childcare is closing until March 29th, and it did spark a bit of panic, I think, among people, because, you know, they were very clear and said, look, the shops will remain open, businesses will remain open, there's enough food for everybody, but there was an element of like, get out of my way, I need to buy food or I'll kill you, kind of stuff with the supermarkets. They were.
Did you do any bulk buying? I asked that without any judgment.
No, I mean, I have to say, like, over the last number of weeks, I've kind of bought a bit extra of stuff here and there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I haven't sort of gone out and bought 80 toilet rolls.
How much toilet paper are we talking in?
And like all the pasta and all the rice and all that kind of stuff. But what I did, like, as this story became more prevalent, was to say, okay, well, this week I'll buy like an extra bag of rice and an extra bag of pasta. And, you know, I bought some flour. I've quite a bit of flour there now. So if it comes right down to it, you know, you can make your own bread, make your own pasta and that kind of stuff. But I haven't sort of gone out and bought like 70 pizzas and, you know, 800 boxes of crisps and stuff, which is kind of what people were doing today. You know, there is a, you know, I think we spoke about it the other day. There's a sort of social responsibility, isn't there? That like, if you buy all of something, nobody else can have any. And like, people need things and food and supplies and what have you in order to live. I understand the panic. I mean, I do understand why, you know, if you've got a family or and all your kids are going to be home from school, all of a sudden you're going out and doing a big shop because, you know, they're going to be eating you out of house and home and everything else. But, you know, there are always people who kind of take it to extremes.
Yes, it's it must be weird. It's quite a weird day in Britain as well, because as much as it's weird in Ireland because everything's shutting down, it kind of feels weird in Britain that everything's not, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
All day. It was one of those days. I don't know if you have this experience ever, but I received texts from about half a dozen different people that were clearly like forwarded WhatsApp conversations. And they all start something like, so my wife's brother's uncle knows someone who works for the government and or is a doctor. You know, it's like, well, obviously, you know, my father-in-law's friends, you know, rabbit is a doctor. And it's always stuff like, you know, what you should do or what is going to happen. There were a lot of predictions today of the schools will close, you know, the football will be called off and things like that. But it didn't come to pass. So, yeah, it's... listen, I'm a layman in these terms. I do not know what I'm talking about, but it does feel a bit odd to be in the country which is sort of not taking obvious steps right now.
Yeah, I was watching the Italian Prime Minister yesterday on the news or whatever it was on Twitter or video, and he was talking about, like, you know, don't make the same mistake we did by waiting. You know, act now to put things in place which help spread or prevent the spread of this particular virus. And when you look at what's happening across, you know, I think probably in terms of you know, where we are, as Dr. James said on the podcast the other day, you know, the UK is where Italy was 2 weeks ago. And where Italy is now is very scary, obviously. And Ireland is, I think, similar in terms of the UK. So, you know, we've taken measures, and maybe it's easier to do in a smaller country. Maybe it's easier to implement those measures. I'm not quite sure. But, you know, you look at what's happening in New York, which has, you know, put in place restrictions, you know, mass gatherings, all those kind of things, 500 people, et cetera, much the same as we have here across Europe. Spain has shut down La Liga and professional football over there. You know, I know there's a timing element to this, and it's probably something that is going to be put in place in the UK, but, you know, we're seeing it now beginning to affect footballers. You know, Arsenal this week, our game was postponed because of exposure to the coronavirus. But we have some Leicester players now who are in self-isolation because they're showing symptoms. So I assume, based on the guidelines that Arsenal were working off, because they're showing symptoms, they will be tested. So if they're tested and it turns out they have it, you know, what does that mean for the rest of the Leicester squad? Or what does it mean for the rest of the Premier League? And how can you maintain a kind of sporting integrity? Like, imagine if one club or one squad of players is sidelined because, you know, X amount of them have been tested positive for the coronavirus. You know, what do you do at that point? Is that just tough luck? Is that like 8 Achilles injuries? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, there are so many competitive implications. I mean, I saw someone making the point online that I thought was interesting, which was kind of even taking the games behind closed doors, I think does raise questions over whether that's fair, because playing a game away from home in an empty stadium is potentially an easier prospect than playing it in a full one.
Yeah, I like to. I don't know if you heard Ken early on the Second Captain's podcast, who was going, well, maybe there's an upside to this. Maybe some of the players who are really shy will find it much easier to play without the gaze of 60,000 people upon them. They might come out of their shells and be brilliant. Tongue in cheek, obviously. But yeah, I mean, there is that element, isn't there, to the games. Like, if you're going away to, you know, wherever, Tottenham or Manchester United or whatever it might be, if you don't have their fans, maybe it makes it easier.
I mean, listen, while we're on it, I think seeing games behind closed doors is kind of, it's not really what anybody wants. That isn't football that we know and love. If it does happen, and it is already happening, actually, I don't know why I say if, the nice thing is the cameras sort of pick up things that players say and stuff like that. You get like a weird insight into how they communicate on the field.
Yeah.
But that is the slimmest of sort of silver linings.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I was watching the PSG Dortmund game for a while last night, and you know, my French is not great, but all I could hear was, you know, allez, allez, from the sidelines. And then there was, I think, a Spanish left back or someone was talking to him in Spanish where he had the ball, and they just sort of shouted at him, portero! And like to go back to the keeper. He didn't in the end, but you know, it would be interesting for about at least a half of football to hear what they say to each other.
Yeah,
and then you'd be
not
like,
much more than that.
Then you're
probably
like,
the stuff footballers shout at each other in the thick of it is probably not particularly poetic, is it?
No. I mean, imagine the, and apologies if you heard any bad language there on the pitch. And apologies if you heard any bad language there on the pitch.
Yeah. There'd be a lot of that going on.
There would be.
It is. Absolutely surreal, and it was surreal watching that PSG game and, you know, the atmosphere that was played in. It feels very odd to me that Brighton host Arsenal on Saturday and that's all set to go. You know, I'm due to be there covering the game, and I must confess, all week I've kind of thought, I don't think that's going to happen, is it? But now it seems it is, and that raises questions about, you know, what's the responsible thing to do for fans, for people working there. It's weird. It's a weird old time. And
it is weird because even if, you know, the advice is right now, let's not close down football, it doesn't rule out the possibility that some of the people who are going to that game on Saturday, whether it's Brighton versus Arsenal or any of the other games that are going to take place across the UK, you know, are free of this thing, that it's I know there's, you know, every time you say, look, close down football, people will say, well, you know, the people will congregate elsewhere to watch the games, as the PSG fans did. You know, they just, you know, all met up and, you know, made noise outside the stadium while one or two of them, you know, sneezed and gave the virus to a few more of them and it spread that way or whatever, you know. But it's like, well, they'll meet somewhere else, or you've got to get places, so why isn't public transport closed down and those sort of things? But I guess it's about, you know, the necessity of those things. You know, do you have to go to a football game, but do you have to get the tube to go to work or whatever it might be? So
yeah, it's leisure football ultimately, you know, as much as it is massively important to us and to everybody. And you're right, I mean, who knows who's carrying what? I mean, in the UK, I think nearly just under 30,000 people have been tested. I mean, that is a
minuscule fraction
of the population, and you know, that's barely one full Premier League stadium, and Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, we're seeing all these footballers might have it, or a couple of famous people have tested positive for it, or politicians. And I sort of think, well, that's because they're the people getting tested. Do you know what I mean? There must be so many more carrying it that we don't know about.
Well, that's exactly it. I saw that the tweet from Arsenal fan at JBaseball44, you know, asking how is this possible. He's quoting a tweet which says that the CDC only tested 77 people in the US. 77 people. You know, in a country the size of the U.S. So, you know, the amount of cases are growing. I mean, in Ireland, I think we had an extra 21 cases or something in the last couple of days. And, you know, exponentially, that's going to apply to the U.K. as well. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess at this point, there's a level of personal responsibility as well, isn't there? That people who feel like it might be a risky thing for them to go to the game, maybe not even necessarily for themselves, but for somebody in their family or somebody else around them. You know, but where do you draw the line there? Like, if you don't necessarily have an elderly relative that might be vulnerable to this thing, but, you know, you get a taxi home, or you get on the bus or whatever it might be, and the person you sit behind or in front of or whatever, they might be the, you know, it's really, really difficult to know quite where the level of responsibility is for things like this. And it's not necessarily just being in a stadium, is it, with somebody? It's the fact that, you know, would it be fair to say that toilets in football stadiums aren't necessarily the most hygienic of places? And
And are people going to queue to wash their hands and mean they miss 10 minutes of a game? I don't think so. And
sometimes it can take 10 minutes to queue to get to the urinal in the first place. You know, you're not going to queue another 10 minutes.
Take your hand sanitizer, I guess, is the advice.
You can't. But I bought it all.
I mean, that's the issue.
Yeah.
But it is a very odd period. And I agree with you that timing appears to be the issue here. Like, I will declare a bias. Like, I have no love for the current UK government or the Prime Minister. So, you know, there's an element of bias there that I, you know, have to make clear. But I accept that they presumably feel that they are going to have to implement these measures at some point, and it's about when they do it to best manage the situation. And unfortunately, like, we don't have hindsight at this point. You know, it may be that they're correct. It just feels odd to be the odd nation out, as it were.
Yeah, the outlier in terms of how everybody else is dealing with this. And obviously,
and you look at China as well, and Korea, and you know, the way in which they have kind of clamped down on it, and that's been by enforcing pretty strict measures.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you have to take into account there are different societies, and, you know, the idea that you could, you know, put a whole city, like, I don't know, like, into lockdown, it just doesn't seem possible. You know, I'm not sure that's in the nature of people from this part of the world. So, you know, I don't know. Look, it's an extraordinarily difficult and unprecedented situation, and one that's very, very difficult to deal with. I was quite curious to look at the Premier League's Twitter account, and there isn't really any mention of any of this on the Twitter account. It feels a bit sanitized. And if you search the Premier League website for coronavirus, it brings you to articles that exist on club websites. There doesn't seem to be much there from the Premier League itself. I mean, I know what they will say, and what the Football League have said is that they're working with the advice that's being given to them, you know, from government. So that's how they're operating on these kind of things. I think, you know, one of the things maybe that gets overlooked in all this is the players themselves, and what is the duty of care and responsibility to them. In the sense that, absolutely, like, you know, there are players' unions in other countries who are saying, well, why should the show go on with the players even behind closed doors?
Yeah.
Because, you know, what you're doing is putting them into close contact with each other. All the things that you're telling everyone else not to do, you're basically saying it's okay for footballers to do for our entertainment and for our fun and for the, you know, the benefit of broadcasters and all those kind of things.
Yeah, so, I think in Spain the players were pretty clear. They sort of kicked up and said, you know, we don't necessarily want to be out there playing in these
circumstances. Yeah, I mean, I think, was it Getafe who were supposed to play Inter Milan? And the president or the chairman of Getafe said, look, you know, we are not going. And if that means we lose the tie, we lose the tie. So, you know, there's that element of it as well, that, you know, whatever about the mass gatherings and the people that are going to congregate before, during, after games, all those kind of things. You know, the players aren't superhuman or immune from this, you know, as the Leicester players have shown. Well, hopefully, you know, they're not infected with this, but they are showing some symptoms. So I feel like that's a consideration that people aren't necessarily focusing on in the wider context.
Well, I think more broadly than that, even, it is just one of those things that brings all sport into perspective, doesn't it? And, you know, we all love football. We love nothing more than watching football matches. But I think if you spoke to a lot of fans, they'd say, you know, that they would certainly feel conflicted about them taking place at the moment. And that speaks volumes because, you know, in conventional circumstances, none of us want to see a game called off. It's part of our routine. It's part of our lives. It's something that we love and something we enjoy. But something much bigger and much more important is occurring. And, it does feel... my personal feeling is that it feels weird and a bit wrong that the Premier League is ongoing at this point.
I tend to agree. I think, you know, it's not really a question of if it's going to be shut down, it's a question of when, and that of course is what the debate is, I suppose. But look,
it's got to be weird though, hasn't it, at the training ground? You know, it's got to be weird for those players, for the manager, for the staff, kind of preparing for games, preparing for an end of the season that you kind of know is going to be subject to delay, subject to, you know, matches.
Yeah, that's true.
Potentially not
yeah.
even happening. Like, it must feel very odd. Like, even physically, if you think about it, you know, the physios, how are they managing that situation? What are the implications for the squad?
Yeah, there's a psychological element to that as well, isn't there? That, like,
absolutely.
I mean, if you're a Premier League footballer right now and you're looking at the leagues in other countries being shut down for, you know, a couple of weeks in Italy, we know in Spain, we know, you know, the Champions League. I mean, how can the Champions League go ahead? I'm not sure it can. I think the Man City Real Madrid game is postponed. You know, the Juventus players, the squad there, because of the player who's been infected with the virus. I mean, are they all going to have to self-isolate or be in quarantine for 14 days? There's some talk that Euro 2020, UEFA are having a video conference on Tuesday, apparently, in which they're going to discuss the whole thing. Why they have to wait to Tuesday, I don't know. But some suggestions via L'Equipe that Euro 2020 is going to be postponed until 2021. I mentioned that to Dr. James off mic after we were finishing, and I was we were just talking about, you know, some of the sporting events and what have you, and I was saying, you know, the thing about Euro 2020 is that it's not just in one country. It's not like there's a mass of fans descending on Spain or France or England or wherever it might be. I said they're having games everywhere. So, you know, many countries across Europe are going to get these wide collections of fans. And he was going, I wouldn't book any tickets for that.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to design an event to efficiently spread a virus, it would look something like Euro 2020.
Yeah, so, I mean, from a footballer's point of view, you know, does it feel... I'm not going to say pointless to play, but it's sort of like, I don't know. You know the way when you're in school, towards the end of term, your behavior might not be at its best.
Yeah.
I wonder, is it, you know, something akin to that? I'm not saying they're gonna bunk off and, you know, drink cider in the park rather than go to class, which is not something that I ever did, I promise.
I know what you mean, though. That thing that happens to teams when they're sort of safely ensconced in mid-table, you know, with a few games to go.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, that's going to kick in straight away. It's going to be fascinating to see how motivated teams look. Because even the Euros being postponed, that could be a big factor in some people's psychology. I mean, when we read about Hector Bellerin and his groin injury he's carrying, one of the reasons they said that he doesn't want to undergo any surgery or anything like that, prolonged rehab, it's because he's got Euro 2020 in mind. Well, I'm pretty sure you can cross that off his list soon.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's so mad, you know, to be experiencing this as a fan. It's really unprecedented in sort of in my conscious lifetime.
Well, all of our lifetime. I mean, you know, I've never seen anything like this. And, you know, we can talk about it from a footballing point of view. And obviously, a societal and a human point of view as well. There are issues with this, you know, and it seems, you know, sometimes almost churlish to sort of talk about, well, what's the effect going to be on football when there are people dying? They had a journalist from Parma on Second Captains actually the other day, and it's, you know, he was saying it's quite eerie there because it's a walled city and everything is sort of shut down and people aren't going out. But the other reality of that is that people are literally dying. They're dying in their houses and they're removed and separated from their loved ones and nobody can go near them. And, you know, the just the reality of that is, you know, it makes you stop and think about, you know, just it's hard to get your head around in a way. You know, this idea that, well, look, it's happening there. You know, it's somewhere in the distance. It, you know, if it happens in China or if it happens in Italy or if it happens in South America or whatever it is, you kind of feel slightly removed from it. But the reality of it, of this thing, is going to happen here and there
it's
where you are.
It's going to happen in Ireland. It's going to happen in the UK. Boris Johnson.
We've had our first death. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear it. Boris Johnson in his address, I mean, I think I might be slightly paraphrasing, but he basically said people are going to lose their loved ones before their time.
Mm.
I mean, you can't really put it more plainly than that. And it is grim. It is grim reading. And it's without wishing to sort of get too existential about it, fuck me, it makes you think about sort of the fragility of of everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it does, because, you know, we sort of have this, like, the world works the way it works, and it's always worked that way, and we've always known it that way, and then something comes along that puts a spoke in the wheel, and you're like, whoa, what the fuck? This is not, you know, this is not how it's supposed to happen, and maybe that's what happens with societies and stuff. You get this sort of correction, or, you know, it makes you think about things in a different way, but, like, you know, even stuff like supply chains and food and, like, what happens if you can't get from one place to the other, or trucks can't get there, or, you know, all this sort of stuff. Maybe it has to change the way we think about the way we live. And, you know, I'm not going to say that this is a positive thing in any way, but maybe there are things that we can learn from events like this, which might hopefully make the world a better place when we get to the far side of them.
I do think that. I think that, you know, at this stage, it's possible to say that. I mean, you know, who knows what's to come, but seeing the way kind of coordinated action can happen, you know, cross country and people can come together, it does make you maybe potentially a tiny bit more optimistic for things like the environmental issues, you know, the climate crisis, how that might be dealt with. But, I suppose the cynic in me says, you know, how much of what's happening is influenced by commercial concerns, and, you know, even the fact that things like football are carrying on, you know, is that business dictating that rather than anything else? Obviously you hope not, but
you hope not.
Really get that way.
Yeah, it's hard not to be a little bit cynical in that regard. But look, before we get to the end of part one, because we have a match tomorrow.
We have a match, I know.
We have a match, and it seems weird, and it seems, you know, I wasn't 100% sure this thing was going to go ahead. I thought it might go ahead behind closed doors. I didn't think it was going to go ahead as normal, but it is going ahead. We seem to have a clean bill of health. I mean, can you get your mind onto this? I'm just sitting here going, like, right, we should talk a little bit about the game because it's a game, and that's, you know, that's why we're here, and what it, you know. And I'm struggling to kind of get my head around the concept of a football match when all this other stuff is going on.
Yes, I feel the same. It's kind of, yeah, it's surreal that we're playing. I can't quite believe it's going to be in a full stadium, but there you go. I mean, I suppose one thing I should say is that in these slightly morbid times and in times where people's freedom will be limited, you know, they might look, of course, naturally people look to entertainment. They look to things that are going to help sustain them in that. And to that extent, you know, the fact that a match is happening, it gives people, you know, hopefully it brings some people some happiness. That's a, you know, there's something to be said for
it
that.
It all depends on you, Mustafi.
Yeah. But I can't really quite get into a sort of tactical headspace about it. I mean, we'll see when we get the questions. Maybe it will, you know, refocus the mind. But I suspect, you know, not all the questions we have will be that match focused, because I don't think anyone's really thinking like that at the moment. I mean, you'll know yourself. You've been writing your blog, and you know, inevitably, this issue is what dominates, because it's very hard to talk about, well, who should we play up front, or what's the best centre-back combination, when your mind's consumed with the news cycle and everything that's going on.
Yeah. What is happening with Martinelli? Well, I don't know, but, like, you know, there's a lot of other shit going on that I got to think about.
What is our best 11, though?
Oh, my God! not even a deadly plague can wipe out that question from our existence.
Maybe we should do it if we've got it today.
Maybe we will. Okay, well, let's try pick a team then for tomorrow. Let's do that. Let's pick a team.
Okay, yeah. We've come this far.
Okay, look, it's going to be Leno. Like, assuming he's fit, it's going to be Hector, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. So he didn't play the last game, did he? And I thought he would start at Man City, which, of course, didn't happen.
But we found out about his groin.
We found out about his groin, but I think my understanding is it's sort of manageable. I think it will be Hector, yeah. Especially because it's probably going to be our last game for quite a long time.
Just give him a game. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Centre halves, Louise and Marie, or Mustafi and Louise?
What's the Mustafi situation? Is he available?
Yeah, I think so. He had a tight thigh and he was being assessed ahead of the Man City game in midweek, but you know, you might say that the Louise Marie combination wasn't the most secure against West Ham. I mean, they had plenty of chances. It's not just down to the central defenders, I know. So, you know, I'm not just saying because of those guys, but I do wonder if that would be in Arteta's thinking.
Apparently, Mustafi and Cedric are now back in full training, and Kieran Tierney as well.
Mm.
I think it will be Mustafi over Pablo Marie, I have to say.
He's not done anything
exceptionally wrong. I just have a feeling that Arteta does like that Mustafi-Luiz combo. So
yeah.
What do you reckon?
I think it will probably be Mustafi as well. And then I guess Saka at left back.
I would think so, yeah.
I think
it'll be Ceballos and Xhaka.
Probably. Mesut Ozil away from home.
I know. I mean, if anyone's going to have a cold, it's this guy. But I the joke had to be made. I'm sorry, Mason.
I was sitting here going, will I? I was going, no, I won't. James will do it, I'm sure.
I mean, any excuse. I think he'll play. I think he'll play. And okay. I think it'll be Pepe and Aubameyang. And then I think it'll be Lacazette, actually.
I think it'll be Aubameyang, Lacazette and Nelson.
Ah, I think that's a decent shout. I do think Lacazette will play.
Yeah, I do too.
Especially because he's had a bit of a break. But I think, and we know how good his goal scoring record is away from home, of course, famously.
Yes. It's been a while. Law of averages is on our side here. He has to score eventually.
True. I mean, Nelson to play would be interesting. You know, I wouldn't oppose that as much as I do like Pepe. I think he would bring something different. And look, maybe we dodged a bullet playing City off the back of that Manchester derby the other day.
Chances are we're not going to have to play them at all. Well, not for a while anyway. Not for a while. I mean, yeah, there are other things to think about here as well. Maybe we'll talk about those in part two.
Okay.
Those are our predictions for the team tomorrow. We'll see what happens. But we will take a little break here. Join us after part two with some questions from Twitter and our Discord right after this.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to what is probably the strangest Arscast Extra I think we've ever recorded. And this is part two, where we answer questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Discord server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. Sorry, Facebook, you're all too busy posting 5G conspiracy theories about how Bill Gates created the coronavirus and wants to give us a vaccination, which is a microchip through which he can control our minds or indeed explode us at any moment. That, I'm not making that up. I'm not saying that's real. I'm just saying that that's what someone was posting on a regular basis on the Arsblog Facebook page the other day, and I kept deleting it. I was like, fucking come on. This is actually quite serious. We don't have time for all this bullshit nonsense. So there you go. But yeah, okay. So let's see. We have some questions here. Mark in Malta, by the way, says, just pointing out the irony that in your last Waffle podcast, you were debating what you would do if you were the last person on Earth. And then 2 weeks later,
I knew that on some level we would have jinxed this whole thing. It's always the case.
Yeah, we should have known better.
We're such fools. We've got to be more careful with our powers. That is interesting, though, isn't it? I mean, I don't think... Imagine if we were the last, though. That'd be a turn up for the books.
It would be weird, wouldn't it? It'd be very weird. Like, I mean, if you were there and I was here, there wouldn't be any internet. Like, let's say we were both aware of the fact that we were the last two people on Earth.
We'd have to journey to find each other. I mean, that's a film.
That is a film. I mean, there's no one to film it. There's no lighting director. No,
I can film it on my phone. Yeah. Just me on this quest. Yeah. It's like The Road by Cormac McCarthy or something. Just like, you know, trudging.
Yeah. But how would we do it? I mean, there's no flights. The Irish Sea is a bit choppy. Because I remember as a kid coming across from England, when we lived in England, coming across to Ireland. You get the ferry from Liverpool You know, the old 8-9 hours it took to get from Liverpool to Dublin.
Is it that long?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean, I know there's the quick ferry now. You know, you go from Dublin Port to Holyhead is like a couple of hours or whatever it is. Yeah. But the old ferry, yeah, used to, I mean, you'd get cabins and you'd stay the night on the ferry and stuff like that. But I do remember, I have very vivid recollections of people sitting in the sort of the bar or the cafeteria area of the ferry, and the vomit sort of sloshing from one side to the other as the boat went, you know, rolling with the big, big waves. So, I mean, you'd have to have an exceptionally calm day for one of us to make it from either Dublin to that side or from that side to Ireland. I think
Imagine if we, like, did meet in the middle, in the water. We were swimming. And then we just bumped into each other.
Knocked each other unconscious and died.
Yeah, and that's how that
ended. That's how it ended. That's how the human race ends.
Yes, it could happen. Look, what about this question here?
Okay.
It's from George Michael, which, I'll be honest, has surprised me.
This is getting more surreal.
I didn't know he followed football.
Especially from where he is right now.
Beyond the Grave, he's done well to get in touch. He's kept his Twitter account
Fair
active.
Fair play.
At By Curious George is his username. And George, he's spelt by BY, but we can all see what he's getting at. George says, I know it's only been a couple of games and he is here on loan, but given it's expected the deal will be permanent, are we ready to confirm that Pablo Mari has filled the void as the resident hot guy at Arsenal? Hashtag tall, dark and handsome.
Look, he seems to be a handsome man. There's no question. Like, yeah. When I'm looking through the squad,
because we took a bit of a hit, didn't we? We lost Giroud. We lost Ramsey.
And I'm not sure we necessarily replaced them with... Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the squad and I'm thinking, yeah.
Because who else is... I mean, Callum Chambers, I think, is pretty handsome. But he's a fair man, and that doesn't generally fare as well, you know?
Yeah, look, tall, dark and handsome. Yeah. Look, I have to say, in fairness, that the squad pictures that they've done for this year don't do anyone any favours.
I'm looking through now and you're absolutely right. They all look a bit like they've been sort of face swapped, don't they?
Very slightly. And, you know, we love Stu and we love David Price. You know, we love you guys. We love you. But, you know, the pictures, I don't know. They don't do anyone any favours. That's all I'm saying. Particularly Hector. Anyway.
They're worth looking at, by the way, because there's some really funny expressions. So if you go to the midfield section, I don't know if you've got it in front of you now.
Yeah, I do.
But look at someone like Matteo Guendouzi, right? He's absolutely smiling away, having a great time. Look at Ainsley Maitland-Niles, really smiling, almost as if he didn't know what was going to happen to him in the second half of this season. Look at Danny Ceballos.
Danny Ceballos is looking like... I don't know.
He's like, why? What's happening? Who's this camera man?
What is that Pricey in the background? Is he trying to do keepy-ups? What the fuck?
Genuinely, I don't know what the Arsenal photographer was doing to provoke that facial expression from Danny Ceballos. You have to go and look at it. He's so bemused by what's going on.
And beside him, Mesut Ozil, it's like someone has just told him you're getting a 4-year extension to your contract.
Yeah. He's laughing all the way to the bank. Joe Willock, I mean, they've just got him out of bed for his, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Xhaka looks happy. Laka or Aubameyang looks happy as always. Nicolas Pepe is a bit brooding, isn't he? He's brooding.
I think I've actually noticed a pattern, which is that a lot of the summer signings aren't smiling. So, Ceballos, Pepe, Martinelli. Like, did they have theirs done at a different time and there wasn't the briefing of make sure you're smiling manically in the first team photo?
Maybe. Who knows?
Saliba also looking very stern in his, next to a positively grinning Mavropanos and El Neni.
He's a happy lad. He's a grand time, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's having a lovely old time. But yeah, I mean, I think Pablo Mari has stepped into the void, let's say, left by Ramsey's departure.
I still think we can, you know, if our transfer business brings in a couple of hunks. I think...
Do you think that there's any correlation between how attractive someone is and how good they are at football?
I think you're more willing to excuse a handsome man something than someone who isn't quite as handsome. Do you think
we're more forgiving of a handsome face?
Some of us. I mean, obviously, if the rugged good looks of Olivier Giroud did not do anything for our friend Elliot at the Arsenal Vision podcast, for example.
Sure. But he's a man of very sort of specific tastes, as far as I understand.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I don't know. I've seen his internet history. I think hello, Elliot, if you're listening. I think, if Mesut Ozil looked like David Beckham, would he be perceived differently? Mm. It's an interesting question.
It certainly is. It certainly is. And I'm not going to say that I had a very large pink cocktail with Elliot this summer in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I'm not.
There was a great photo of him and Tim from Arse to Mouse. Did you see that?
I did, yeah.
They looked like they were heading out for a grand old night together.
Grand old night in Las Vegas.
I mean, to be fair, wow, what a life to be living in. Mm. I was sort of jealous I wasn't there. The more the merrier.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, we're undecided on that, I think. Are we?
Oh, I think we've decided. I think he's the hot guy, but he could do with more support. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay. Well, look, Raul, sort it out.
Yeah.
Sort it out.
Your agent mates must know someone handsome. Someone else handsome.
Exactly. Here's a question. Oh, Arsenal Puzzles responded to your picture of a magpie, fairly serious-looking magpie, saying, was that COVID-19? Which, of course...
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed that. There was a few other bird puns about it. Listen, do you want a show-stopping announcement?
Yes, please.
Right. Given that this is technically your show, I really should have run this by you beforehand, but I'm not going to. If football is cancelled, in its stead, Magpie Facts will return to the Ask Us Extra.
Come on. That's good. I'm all right with that. And actually, on that, we have a question here from, well, it's not necessarily quite, well, it is kind of a question, from Joey R., who's at Joey in some D. And he's responding to a tweet from a guy called Dan Hilton, who is the host of the Barcelona pod. He's been on the show before, actually, Dan. And he said, because of what today means for the next 30 days of my life, minimum, this is the craziest day of my professional life. I didn't let go or lose my job. The sport just disappeared, which is kind of bizarre. And Joey says, this is a good take. I know Dan from the Barcelona pod, but it does raise a good question for hosts of popular podcasts and shows I listen to. What's the plan for coverage of a sport that has disappeared?
Well, the first thing I would say is, if we learn anything doing this show and doing the blog and all those things, it's that people love football for all sorts of reasons apart from football matches.
Yeah.
Look at the summer, for example. I'm sure you would say, you know, we get a lot of listeners and you get a lot of traffic to the site when it's the summertime, as long as there are other things kind of going on. I suppose that might be a bit different. It's not like we're heading into a transfer window, is it?
No, we could be heading into a transfer void. That's one of the things I worry about.
Yeah, I mean, what about people's contracts who expire, you know, in the summer? We might have games still going on then, if everything's pushed back far enough.
I never thought of that, like, because player contracts...
They end at...
Well, I mean, they go in at the end of June, usually. Do we have anyone who's out of contract in June? But other clubs must do.
Knowledge, but plenty of clubs will.
Mm. What happens with Cedric, for example? Like, if the league gets delayed and it starts up again in I don't know, and we have to play into June or July, and his loan spell expires at the end of May, whatever it might be.
How will we carry on as a football club, you mean, without Cedric? I think... Genuinely, in seriousness, I imagine what would happen there is that they would arrange, at the very least, a short-term contract to cover him, to keep him as an Arsenal player, because I guess the registration window would have to open.
But what if the season doesn't end until, like, the end of June, for example?
It's mad,
so it doesn't end until the end of June. Your players are going to need, like, do they need holidays? If they've had a month off, if they haven't played for a month because the league has been shut down because of, you know, what's happened, do they need a holiday? Or,
well, hopefully they can all the summer tournaments, so that helps a little bit, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, there's no way if the leagues are delayed that you can't do Euro 2020. I mean,
but I think there's a Copa America as well, isn't there, to consider?
Yeah, there is, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's, if they don't happen, I guess, you know, we can kind of catch up in time, theoretically, for Euros next summer.
Does the transfer window, like, stay open until a couple of months into the season, the new season?
Well, they've already approved, haven't they, that the transfer deadline in the UK will go back to being August 31st in line with the rest of Europe.
Yeah.
So they've stopped the idea that transfers will be completed before the Premier League season. So I imagine we will definitely be in line with Europe, but when the European deadline falls, who knows?
Mm.
Who knows? I mean, it could be quite a grueling campaign next season, couldn't it, in terms of...
Yeah.
Coming back early, you know, getting through everything ahead of the Euros. And, you know, we've all said we can't wait for Mikel Arteta to have a full pre-season. Maybe he won't get a full pre-season.
What a fucking start to management that is for Mikel Arteta.
Like,
you're parachuted into a club which is in the shit, the absolute shit, at the worst possible time of the season because it's the festive period. You get little or no time to work with the players. You get a couple of loan signings in January. You know, you're trying to pick up the pieces of something, and then you think, okay, well, look, we'll get to May and we'll see what happens, and then, you know, the world will carry on as normal, and then we can bring in some new players, make some signings, sell some players, get a preseason together, work together, you know, get what I want to do in this new season. And then it's like, well, actually, no, there's a deadly virus that, you know, is going to kill lots of people, and as such, you know, you're not going to have those things. You're just going to have to roll with the punches. I mean, that's, you know, that's a tough start to your managerial life, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. As if inheriting sort of the squad and the situation that he did at Arsenal wasn't weird enough. I mean, I suppose small mercies, really, but as Arsenal fans, maybe we should be a tiny bit grateful, a tiny bit relieved that if this season were to completely go up in smoke, I don't think too many of us would be too sorry about that, would we?
Well, it all depends what happens. I mean, we had some questions here on the Discord, if I can just find them here. Bum, bum, bum. Liney says, with COVID-19 potentially putting the kibosh on finishing the league season and the various tournaments, I think we should look on this as a fun opportunity. Okay. Can you or Gunnarblog think of a fun and alternative and safe way for teams to decide the winner of the various ongoing competitions? Maybe a dance-off. I mean, I'm sure we could think of some fun ones, but, like, what happens if the league is shut down? You know, we know La Liga is shut down until for at least 2 weeks. We know that Italy is shut down until April the 3rd. But what if at April the 3rd, nothing is that much better in Italy? And what if after 2 weeks of no football in Spain, the cases continue to rise and the illnesses, what happens? I mean, I think you kind of have to declare the season void in a way.
Yes, I did see a tweet about this not long ago. There's some speculation that this could happen in the Bundesliga. And I'm not sure of the exact source, but Ronan Murphy on Twitter, who is a journalist for Goal, says the DFL and DFB...
Good English name, that, by the way.
Yeah. are considering ending the Bundesliga season after this weekend, according to The Express. No trophy would be awarded and no relegation would take place. Instead, the Bundesliga would be expanded to 22 teams for next season, with the top four teams from the second tier being added.
Wow, because, you know, the implications are mad, aren't they? Because you could
the implications for Liverpool are substantial, aren't they?
Well, exactly. But I mean, you look at the league table and you say, well, look, Liverpool are the champions. There's no question that Liverpool are the champions. But if you declare Liverpool the champions, surely you then have to declare all the other stuff, like who gets into Europe, who gets relegated, who gets promoted. Yeah. So the idea that if things stretch out a bit, you can only declare the champions seems really weird to me. So you may that's it. We wipe this season from, not necessarily from the record books, but we put this season down as one in which, unfortunately, there were no winners, there were no absolute losers, and we just carry on again from where we were at the start of the season.
Well, Arsenal would be the winners, I think, in that situation. Is that viable?
How do you make it fair? How can you legitimately make it fair?
I guess you have to end it or void it, don't you? Nothing in between.
Yeah, you play the games, or if you can't play the games, then it's void. It seems to
me,
anyway.
I think that's
right.
Yeah, I think that is right.
And you know, there are implications for fans as well, you know, because fans have paid for their season tickets. And
yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see how that all works with people getting refunded.
Somebody sent me something. Paul Davies, our friend, who sent us something which basically says that the club aren't necessarily liable to refund people if games can't be played for whatever reason. It would seem extremely the wrong thing to do to just say, well, we don't have to refund you your money, you know, because that's in the terms and conditions. Yeah, there's a sort of moral obligation, isn't there? When this thing is sweeping the globe, that's out of everybody's hands, it would seem like the wrong thing to do to keep people's money.
Yes, I haven't asked the club about this directly, but I will do. But my understanding is that is effectively there to protect the club in situations where, like, the conduct of certain fans leads to a game being called off.
If
the UEFA sort of give out a suspension because we set off a load of flares or something like that. But you would like to think that as a gesture of goodwill, any necessary refunds do take place. Now, that's going to cost the club more money. You know, we were worried about a cup credit that Arsenal might have to pay back at the end of the season.
Wow. Well, how many games is it? 10 games left in the Premier League. Wow.
A fair chunk of change.
That's a lot of money. I wonder, do they have insurance for something like this?
It's so few insurance policies, I think, from my understanding, cover this. I don't know, but
is this an act of God type thing?
I don't know. I don't know if it qualifies or not. I have to say, actually, I don't really know what I'm talking about at this point. We need another expert on.
We need an insurance expert. Any insurance brokers out there? Because if there's one thing people love to talk about and listen to on a podcast, it's insurance.
let's push people's patience. Do you know what I mean? It's like, let's see what we can get away with now. Well, we get sponsors, I guess, for that one.
Yeah.
What about this then from I'm Merck on Twitter, who says, hi, Arseblog and Gunnerblog. Hello.
Hello.
Would you support the Premier League season finishing the remaining games behind closed doors? What if the alternative was cancelling the rest of the games?
You know, again, it's hard to say without the external factors, but I think if Premier League games are being played behind closed doors, it means that all games are being played behind closed doors. That's a fair assumption to make, isn't it? Not just Premier League games, but the games in the Championship, League One and League Two and all those
kind
of things.
Yeah. Like League One, League Two clubs are much dirtier and grubbier than Arsenal fans. They'll pass the disease on easiest.
Oh, my God. My point, My point was going to be that, you know, for a club in the Premier League, which is propped up to a great extent by television money and Sky and broadcasting and all those kind of things, you know, of course you miss the revenue of match days, but it's far more important for other clubs. And, you know, you think about it from your own point of view, or if you have a business, if you go 2 months or 3 months or 6 months without your major or without one of the major revenue streams to your business is going to be in trouble. Mm. And when you break it down to, you know, to something personal, like how many of us can go like 3 months, 4 months, 5 months without being paid? You know, not many people can do that. So I think that, you know, it's all well and good to say, well, play them behind closed doors and we can sit at home and we can be entertained by the football because we're all sitting at home and that's, you know, we have to stay in. We're all quarantined. We're all in self-isolation. But at least the football is on for us. You know, we could watch a fucking movie or watch a box set or watch an old series or watch a new series or watch Netflix or, you know, read a book or play PlayStation or, God forbid, we could talk to each other, you know, to pass the time.
Yeah.
The financial implications, I think, for football clubs, if games are played behind closed doors, are too great, really, to make that a realistic option or a fair option. I think that there will be clubs that go to the wall, clubs that just fold because they just can't, they can't afford to pay their players. They won't be able to, you know, to pay all the things that they've got to play without gate receipts, without the money that they should get for playing games. So if you know, I think we have to like step back and look objectively at like what's best for the sport. And it might, you know, It seems to me anyway that like a 3 month cancellation, if that's what it takes, would be far better for football clubs than playing games behind closed doors, you know, for that very reason, because they have to pay their bills, they have to pay their wages, and, you know, they still have to do that, I suppose, even if games don't take place. But if those games are being replayed, it's revenue that they will get back in.
Yeah, I guess at some point. Yeah, I mean, I'm more on the side of, you know, it's really tricky because when we are all stuck indoors, being able to watch a football match, albeit one in the eeriest of atmospheres, would be a nice relief. But I find, as much as that appeals, I don't think I can quite square it with myself. It feels also wrong and risky for those players to subject themselves to travel and different environments, you know, where nobody else is. I know they're very handsomely paid for it. But,
yeah,
you know,
but I mean, that doesn't mean they should be put at risk just because they get paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know? Okay, well, look, let's have one to finish, and this is sort of back to the same thing. Garza on the Discord says, will y'all play FIFA against each other live every Saturday until we're back to normal? Can you do, like, a 90-minute game of FIFA? Is that possible?
Yeah, I think it is possible.
Wow.
Maybe we should do it, and not behind closed doors.
Not behind. Anyone can come along, and they can watch. So, yeah, I like it.
We might get 60,000 in, to be honest, because they won't be at the Emirates.
60,000 on YouTube watching Arsblog versus Gunnerblog, Arsenal versus Arsenal on FIFA.
Yeah, obviously, in Arsenal tradition, probably won't do it Saturday at 3 p.m. We'll do it on like a Sunday lunchtime or something horrendous. Yeah,
Sunday half 12, exactly.
Yeah, sure.
But
classic kickoff.
We have another one here from Ian Tighe, who's at Ian Spins on Twitter. Hello, Ian. He says, with talk of bike races moving to Zwift, in brackets online racing. I don't know what that is.
Is that like, come on, Peloton, let's go.
Let's go. Zwift is a video game. It's a massively multiplayer online cycling and running video game and physical training program. Do you have to have like...
That's cool, actually. I've just Googled it. It looks really cool.
Zwift allows players to ride their bicycles on stationary train. Wow. So you basically...
You pedal.
And, okay, that's cool.
But, you know, it's a video game and you can see where you're going. This is a great initiative.
So anyway, Ian says if online or if cycling is moving to Zwift, should. I'm trying to. I've just broken my computer, so hang on one second.
Basically, should football be decided by FIFA? Is that where we're going?
Kinda. Where has it gone? Where is the fucking question? How has it disappeared? Here it is. Should the Premier League be settled by managers facing off on PlayStation FIFA? He says, I reckon Jose is a rage quitter.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Undoubtedly. Oh, and by the way, while we're looking for some silver linings, some good news, are you enjoying what's happening with Jose at Tottenham?
Oh, my God, yes. Oh, yes. On the Discord, The Nord asks, how does this Mourinho disaster rate among them all? I bet I could make a drinking game based off every time he's thrown a player under the bus. Dombele really got it this week, eh?
Yeah, I mean,
I think we have... Anyway.
It's the best one, isn't it? Because it's Spurs.
And it's so quick.
It's so quick. I know. Absolutely extraordinary. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. If anything, that's the main reason I have to want the season to continue. Of course, I've got huge regard for the public safety, but I also am really enjoying this bad run of Jose Mourinho results. So I'm torn, Andrew. I'm torn.
Yeah, you know what the best thing is, though? The best thing is that we, if it went to, like, FIFA as a way to decide the season, we'd win the league. We'd win the league. Do you know why? Because Mikel Arteta is the youngest manager in the Premier League.
So he's a cool kid. He's down with the kids.
Yeah, the cool kids. That was a song, wasn't it?
He's playing FIFA.
Na-na-na-na, be like the cool kids. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I know that song. Anyway, I can't remember who it's by. But anyway... the list of Premier League managers 2020, like, who can we rule out immediately as being no good at FIFA? I think, look, let's face it, no disrespect.
Yeah.
But Roy Hodgson is not going to beat anyone at FIFA.
He's going to struggle.
Did I ever tell
you
that story? You know, around the corner from us, you know the way chippers have been, you know, chip shops in Ireland, England, traditionally Italian.
Yes.
So came home, this is a couple of years ago anyway, and you go in and you've had a few beers and you're getting a bag of chips or whatever it is. This guy was in there and he was well on, it's fair to say. And he came in, he was talking to the guys behind the counter. He was going, no disrespect, no disrespect. And the guys were looking at him going, what the fuck is this? Because they're all from like Romania or Bulgaria or something. This chipper is like Eastern European. They've taken it over. Right. He goes, no disrespect. And they're all going, what the fuck is this guy going on? He goes, looks out the window, goes, oh, fuck, cops. Empties out like a wrap of speed or Coke or something on the table and fucking snorts it all up and legs it out the door, comes back in a while later going, no disrespect, no disrespect. And the guys are behind the chipper are like, what the fuck is this guy? Anyway, that was it. That was my no disrespect story. So let's...
In conclusion,
we all laughed because he was off his box and he just fucking... he stuck like a whole wrap of speed or Coke up his nose in about 3 seconds.
Wow.
So
that's one way to entertain yourself.
It certainly is. So Mikel Arteta is 37. He is the youngest manager in the Premier League, while Roy Hodgson is the oldest at 72.
Like, is Steve Bruce isn't going to be good, is he? No, his thumbs are too fat. He can't press the right buttons.
Sean Dyche, fucking PlayStation, dog. No, yeah, he's not having any of that. Chris Wilder.
He doesn't even have broadband. Yeah. Chris Wilder. Yeah, I don't know. I think
do you reckon he could be a dark horse, kind of?
Yeah, I think he could be a dark horse because he's quite astute, isn't he? Just trying to think.
Dean Smith, 48 years of age.
I've got so few opinions on Dean Smith. Do you? Do you know why? Because I look at the Aston Villa bench and I can't look past the horror that is John Terry.
Mm, that's true.
Frank Lampard, he's quite young. He's got have played a bit of FIFA.
Do you reckon?
Do you think?
Maybe.
I would say so.
How old is Frank Lampard? He's 41. Yeah, he could be good. Graham Potter, who is the Brighton manager, isn't he?
Yeah. Klopp 44. I reckon.
Do you reckon Klopp plays video games? I'm not sure he does.
Do you not think?
No.
I think he sort of probably does to try and be mates with everyone, but maybe not.
Mm, Daniel
Guardiola?
Fark. No, Pep doesn't do video games. He sits in his attic, you
rocking
know?
Back and forth.
Exactly. Rocking back and forth, trying to work out tactics by candlelight. He does it by candlelight because...
Eddie Howe would be all right, wouldn't he?
I reckon, yeah, 42 years of age.
He'd have a go, at least.
How is Sean Dyche only 48? I'm 48.
Oh, you're the same age as Sean Dyche?
Yeah. That's mental.
That is mad, isn't it? It is weird when you find out stuff like that.
Ralph Hasenhüttl?
It's weird that Arsenal's manager is younger than you, isn't it?
Yeah, way weird. Ralph Hasenhüttl, do you think he does a bit of video gaming? I'd say he does VR stuff, PlayStation VR.
I reckon he's playing that bike game, to be honest.
Yeah, Brendan? What about Brendan?
Ooh, Brendan.
I'd say Brendan Rodgers, the only video game he plays is strip poker on a Commodore 64.
That's a horrible, horrible...
And he's the one image. That strips.
Sure, sure. He plays himself and he just strips.
And he's going, ooh, Brendan.
Ooh.
Sorry.
I don't know if I like it.
Carlo Ancelotti, 60 years of age.
I don't think he's playing FIFA.
No. David Moyes?
No way. He wouldn't tolerate it.
Nigel Pearson?
Come on, mate. He'd just, like, stamp on the PlayStation and, you know, boot it.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
Maybe. I mean, like, he was a player probably on a PlayStation at some point. I reckon if you've been on a game, if you've been on a PlayStation game, surely you've had a go at it to see how crap you were or how good you were.
I was on FIFA for a while. Andrew Mangan was on FIFA. Yeah. It wasn't me, though, you know. You know when you make
Grimsby
your own player? Yeah,
forward.
But yeah, it was Fleetwood and Altrincham and all those kind of things. But you know when you make your own player and you go, is my name here in the commentary? And for a long time, it wasn't. And then it was for a while, and then it's not again. And I have to choose Mangani, whoever he is. I don't know who Mangani is. Who is Mangani?
I think he plays in France, actually. I think I came across him on Football Manager and thought, I bet that's who Andrew uses for his...
Mangani footballer, Thomas Mangani. He is a French footballer who plays for Angers.
There you go.
Angers. Let's have a look at him. Yeah.
32.
Thomas Mangani. That's me. So are we saying with some assurance that Mikel Arteta is going to be the best FIFA guy?
Yeah, be the champion.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
All right. So that's how we work it out. That's how the Premier League season. Perfect.
Mourinho. FIFA tournament.
Mourinho's not on FIFA, no, for sure.
No way.
No way.
You just blame all his players all the time.
Hey, you know
There's
what,
so
though?
Many people you can substitute off.
Yeah. You know what? There is a game on Monday, so we've got plenty to talk about on Monday.
There's a game on Saturday, you mean?
Saturday. My apologies.
Well, it's a fast-moving situation, Andrew. That's what they keep saying.
Yeah.
But, yeah, in theory, there's a game to talk about.
I think there will be. I think there will be a game on Saturday. Could be one of our last of 2020.
Well, let's make the most of it.
What do we do? What do we do? We've got to pivot to something. You know the way everyone pivoted to video? We're pivoting to video.
This is a science podcast now, anyway.
Science, movies, PlayStations, all those kind of things. We can do, like, reviews of box sets, all the stuff people want. We'll give you what you want.
Yeah, they'll decide. We'll watch old Arsenal videos when we were really good and talk about that.
That won't hurt.
That's sure to cheer everybody up.
All right. Well, look, we'll leave it here. Listen, thank you everyone for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. Stay well, stay safe, stay sensible, use common sense, all that kind of stuff. And hopefully this thing will be behind us at some point. We'll talk to you on Monday after whatever the fuck happens this weekend against Brighton. So until then, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.